It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go. We are off and running on Titanic. No. We are off and running on Thorn in the Side, Thursday on the Horn. Just see if you're paying attention there, right? Yeah. It's the 25th day of October, 2018. This is the Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live. And that, of course, is where you go. If, like me, you'd like to take part in the extraordinary, well, in the Madcap Mary Multimedia Wacky Zany Real-Time Extravaganza, that is the Horn chat room. Just go to headon.live and pick a quick chat room. Pick yourself out a screen name and a password. And jump right in. Conversation's fine. If you do that, you'll be immediately greeted by the likes of Anatole, Little Thunder, VT Blom. More to come later. All capably moderated by longtime and veteran, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has folded space today to become Man Cave. So, the program's live. It's absolutely live. So, we're sending. Little Thunder says, hi, Bob, so I know I'm reaching. At least I'm reaching Minnesota. Hey, yeah, that's good. And we have thanks to send out because we are done with fundraising for the month of October, so we just say thank you this afternoon. Thanks very kindly to brand new subscriber, longtime friend, Johannes in Colorado. John, thank you, John. John has a message here in a minute that I want to share. Thanks as well to James in Spain. And thank you very much to Asa, and thank you very kindly to Kay. Those are all subscribers for this 25th day of the month. If you'd like to be a subscriber, you can jump in. Remember that $10 a month that you kindly gift works out to about a 20th of a cup of coffee a day. Per hour of programming over the course of a month. So that little checkbox is there, but that's as far as we go fundraising wise, except for this. I have a message from John. We have no fundraising goal this evening. We're done for the month. We have trashed Fitzwalker Stan once again. Having subscribed today, John said, in addition to my new $10 monthly subscription via PayPal, I'll place a $50 challenge on the table to others who value your broadcast and are able to support the Horn, and I'll add a second $50 contribution to the first $50 that's matched. Let me know as soon as my challenge is met, and then I'll send along the challenge funds. So that would just make the month a little bit nicer. If anybody wants to meet John's challenge, then, I'll tell him, and that'll make things, that will help, because we run this program on a shoestring. the absolute bare minimum necessary to get from 1 month to the next. Thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa, telling me Festering Thursday is live and loud on both streams. Senor Bob. Thank you. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. And let's see here. A couple of emails rolling in early. As Steve from Georgistan says, wouldn't it be great if everybody had a gun? Breaking, Atlanta Journal-Constitution, argument between neighbors leads to SWAT standoff in Forsyth County. Oh, yeah, Forsyth County. I remember Forsyth County. Isn't that just lovely?
Lovely.
Just another day in Gunmerica. Right? And because we're going to have to talk about, other things besides the bombings. Because there's really not a lot out. I mean, there's been some you know, more bombs. Joe Biden. Robert De Niro. And who knows, there may yet be more out there. You know, some evidence is beginning to bubble up to the surface, like the fact that, I mean, you tell me, can't spell, uses worn-out right-wing memes. Did I mention can't spell? You know, what was that last night? Couldn't spell CNN if you spotted on the C and the N? One of them was returned to sender postage due. So, you sort it out. But meanwhile, of course, bear in mind that this couldn't possibly be... No, the false flag, false flag. And the cries for civility roll out across a nation. And what's next? If somebody tells somebody at dinner that they don't like their policies, that the bombs will actually work that next time? God bless Auntie Maxine. She said earlier today, having been informed that she was targeted not once, but twice, she said, they're not going to scare me. I don't scare. And you know what? She doesn't. She doesn't scare. She said, I'm not going to hide. I'm not going to run. I'm going to keep doing what I'm constitutionally obliged to do. And that is... Well, that's the essence of patriotism and bravery. The FBI, you'll be interested to know, is treating this as a matter of domestic terrorism. That must mean that somewhere in the bowels of the FBI, they've got some notion that a person with skin with a skin tone darker than a brown paper bag, or maybe a Muslim... faith is behind this, because white people are never, never, ever domestic terrorists, except, you know, when they are. The investigation is turning toward where? What? Yes, Florida. Florida, home of, I don't know. My friends, broadcasting live from the Southern Command in sunny Florida. Nah. But wait, it's also the home of, what? Why, yes, that disgusting pile of bricks, Mar-a-Lago. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in Florida, but... Interesting, Florida. Because, you know, there's sure no, There's sure no maggots down there. Oh, no. Of course not. Impossible. Inconceivable. Right? Now, apparently it was quite the little Donnybrook in Forsyth County. That's where the Klan used to go to march in Georgia. It was one of those sundown counties. As of 2 hours ago, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution reported there's an active SWAT situation in the Settles Lake subdivision in Forsyth County. Began as an argument between two neighbors. And then the neighbors decided to resort to pulling their freedom protectors. Then 911 got called, and then one of the neighbors barricaded himself inside his house, again, with his freedom protector. They don't think anybody's inside the house, but, well, the tales are, shall we say, sketchy, except for the fact that there's just freedom breaking out all over there. And that's some lovely country. That's up by, what's the name of the lake? I used to go there all the time when I was in Atlanta. Help me, Steve. I want to say lake, no. I can't remember. How about that? But I'll see you in a minute because Steve will hear me. At least I hope. I mean, that's kind of Steve's neck of the woods. Lanier. Lamar? open Sarsaparilla? Open Saskatchewan? Lake Lanier. Thank you, Steve. Pretty country. But the LA Times reported that Auntie Maxine, and that is a term, of endearment. Auntie Maxine's not having any of this business of being intimidated or terrorized into silence. No. She said, we have to keep doing what we're doing in order to make this country right. That's what I intend to do. And as the young people said, ain't scared. Good on her. If this nation is to be saved, we will need the House and people like Auntie Maxine holding gavels. And looking into things like, Donald Trump's taxes, perhaps? Which might actually be a... You must understand that a bombing like this is... It's an attempt to terrorize the public into behaving in the way that the terrorist desires. And the terrorist, in this case, desires that people stop criticizing his God Emperor. Not Lake Lamar, Silent R. Lamar, but, right. Mm-hmm. Scott in San Diego points out, Florida's also the home of, dare I say it, my gun-toting Mark Levin-fixated brother. He happens to hate all of the recipients so far of the bombs, with the possible exception of Robert De Niro, who he's probably never heard of. The list widens. But of course, there's been loud calls for civility coming from the party of incivility. Julius Geezer, with his tiny thumbs, taking to the Twitter today to declare that it's the Fourth Estate's fault for it's basically offering up the same excuse that a wife beater uses. Why do you have to make me angry? Why do you have to do this to me? Why do you have to make me hurt you? Right? Yeah, we got a cool rhetoric, say the Republicans. Except, it's hard to stop something when you won't when the side who's doing most of the violence, running over people at murdering people at protests and things like that, starting brawls on the sidewalk in Portland and New York and Miami, that kind of thing, won't tell them to stop it. Which brings us to a guy we've heard from before, a fellow by the name of Rodney Howard Brown. Now, he guest hosted for Alex Jones 2 days ago, even as news of the bombing of George Soros was moving into the national consciousness. And he carried on a conversation, if that's what you can call it, with some wingnut by the name of Chris Ann Hall. And got, upset.
Generations of lawyers and judges who have all been taught this supremacist kind of ideology that nobody can even question a judge. And that's the thing that we need to break. That's the thing that is breaking the discipleship.
Which is actually shocking, because if you hear Bader Ginsburg talk, she talks about the Constitution of America being totally flawed.
Now, we're going to file this. Let me give the advance warning for the hockey puck. Get the hockey puck handy. We're going to file this away for in the materials that we use to discuss the First Amendment and our fetishized vision of it. This is free speech. This is clearly political speech. All right? I want to be clear about that. This is ostensibly protected speech under the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. It's free speech being exercised by a dude from South Africa who, among other things, has laid hands upon and prayed over the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini.
Shocking, because if you hear Bader Ginsburg talk, she talks about the Constitution of America being totally flawed, and that if they were there to rewrite the Constitution, they would not use the U.S. Constitution as the model.
Yeah, well, she actually said that too. She was invited to Egypt back during the Arab Spring when they were going to rewrite their Constitution. She sat before an Egyptian journalist who asked her point blank, as the Egyptians are writing their new Constitution, should they use the U.S. Constitution as a model? This Supreme Court justice, who took an oath that she would support the Constitution of the United States, without hesitation, without mental reservation, flat out said no.
Which is not supporting the Constitution of the United States. Pointing out that the Constitution of the United States has flaws in it, like the 3/5 clause, or, say, the Electoral College. Well, both of which are racist in their genesis and their origins. That's not supporting the Constitution. That is being historically knowledgeable about the Constitution's origins. Just so we're clear.
that we need to look at the human, that the UN human rights agenda.
Now, is it at that juncture, shouldn't she be removed from office?
That is what...
That was high treason.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's actually clearly what we would classify constitutionally as bad behavior. She should have been impeached immediately.
Okay. I'd have them shot.
Did you hear that? The immigrant from South Africa says that he would have a sitting member of the Supreme Court shot and claimed that criticizing the Constitution of the United States or its origins is treason. And then, what's this woman's name? Chris Ann Hall? Once again, there's the statement and there's the response.
Impeached immediately.
Okay. I'd have them shot.
Go on, you know. Well,
I'd have them shot. I'd have them shot. That's so funny. That's so funny when we talk about shooting Supreme Court justices because we disagree with their interpretation of the Constitution, which is the job of the Supreme Court in the first fucking place. I'd have them shot. Let me know if anybody ever confronts, say, I don't know, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, who suggested a couple of nights ago that his political opponent, Beto O'Rourke, should be imprisoned, you know, for being the political opponent of Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America. Let me know if anybody maybe shares that clip with Rafaelito and see if he can find it anywhere in him to utterly denounce this monstrosity, this man who comes to this country and then defecates on the notion of free speech by suggesting it would be a good idea to murder, to commit homicide against a member of the Supreme Court. Now, for instance, John Roberts lied, straight up lied, in his Supreme Court confirmation hearings. He committed perjury. So too did Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Slappy Thomas. And so too did Brat Kavanaugh, and, you know, Ann's boy Neil probably did too. The remedy for that, as created by the framers of the Constitution, is impeachment. It's not the exclusive remedy. It is merely the political remedy. And if there was a sufficient amount of patriotism inside the Congress of the United States, and if there was a will to put country before politics or country before party, or the Constitution itself before party or politics, then the evidence would be so glaring that getting a 51% vote in the House to impeach wouldn't be much of a challenge, and being confronted with the evidence, getting 67 members of the United States Senate to impeach, to convict and remove those justices from office wouldn't be much of a challenge either. This is the part where, if you want to, you can laugh. Because there is no such Congress. There are no such Republicans. You know, the chlamydia Claudius is running around the country on your dime, going to political rallies for his lick spittles, and telling them,
if you let the Democrats take over the House, they're going to impeach me. They're going to impeach me.
And that's just a lie. Because the membership of the House, no matter how much they despise Donald Trump, the Democrats there, even if they get a majority, they're not going to impeach him. And before somebody gets all sparkly and says, goddamn Debbie Wasserman Schultz, fucking Democrats.
Goddamn DNC, neoliberal shills.
Before that happens, bear in mind that there's some ciphering involved. And it goes back to what I just said a moment or two ago. You might be able to get a bill of impeachment out of the House. It only requires 51% of the vote. But there's no point in there's no sense in a futile act, because if you presented video of Donald Trump committing the various crimes that he has committed, the Republicans still would not vote to remove him from office, because to them, their access to political power is more important than the well-being of the Union, the well-being of the Republic, the viability of this of constitutional governance as a going concern going forward. So nobody's going to impeach Donald Trump if the Democrats get the House. But you see, the maggots are incapable of that sort of nuanced thought. And so the message works.
Democrats are going to impeach our God Emperor. Brooga, brooga, brooga. Maga, maga.
Because if you're a Republican, what motivates you is fear. Not reason, not common sense, not even patriotism. Just fear. Plain and simple. So there it is. Rodney Howard Brown, an immigrant to the United States. Is he a citizen? I don't know. Suggesting that a Supreme Court justice should be shot.
Should have been impeached immediately.
Okay. I'd have them shot.
Well, fortunately with Kings, we got rid of the whole execution
thing. I understand.
Thing.
But, you know, to me, that's a total violation.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, because how you place to defend the Constitution when you're actually throwing it under the bus?
Which she didn't do. But he's an evangelical, so as that verse in his book says, the truth is not in him. I think that's in the book of James, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. This is not, however, to say that all the news is bad. Far from it. There was a display last night in what can only be described as an absolutely raucous debate. And our buddy Hung Like Jesus reminded me of it. In Florida, in regard to the governor's race. And I think, I agree, with Hung Like Jesus' assessment. DeSantis, you know, Ron DeClantis, Ron Monkey Up DeSantis, got the floor mopped with his ass last night. And that is to put it gently, mildly. Some of the things that Andrew Gillum said, I looked at Ron DeSantis, who himself was left sitting there looking like a cow staring at a new gate, and thought, man, if you weren't the dickhead that you are, I'd feel really bad for you. Because if it had been a boxing match, Andrew Gillum would have been standing over him like Ali standing over Sonny Liston. I mean, it was that. Mind-blowing. Trying to get the audio up here because it really is. It's for the ages. Because what it represents a rather important moment in our politics. Damn it. Oh, this gets annoying. I'll have to pop out of the chat room for a minute here. A note coming in from Jeff from Hellhole, Indiana. Jeff says, we've tried being civil with these asshats for decades. F them. And I certainly understand the sentiment. So let's see if... See if I can get this audio. Here we go.
Certainly not going to take anything from Andrew Gillum, who's endorsed the Dream Defenders, which says Israel is an apartheid state, and which says the police and prisons have no place in justice.
Mr. Gillum, wait for the applause, Andrew.
Let me first say, my grandmother used to say, a hit dog will holler.
Woo!
And it hollered through this room. Mr. DeSantis has spoken. First of all, he's got neo-Nazis helping him out in the state. He has spoken at racist conferences. He's accepted a contribution and would not return it from someone who referred to the former president of the United States as a Muslim, N-I-G-G-E-R. When asked to return that money, he said no. He's using that money to now fund negative ads. Now, I'm not calling Mr. DeSantis a racist. I'm simply saying the racists believe he's a racist.
Whoa. Stop the fight. Down goes Frazier. Down goes Frazier. Only, you know, Ron DeSantis is no Frazier. But he looks over at the moderator as if he wants him to call the fight. That's the perfect response. I'm not saying he's a racist. I'm saying the racists think he's a racist. Which is an absolutely true statement. That's why the racists are running those ads, the latest of which I played here a couple of nights ago. I is the Negro Andrew Gillum, with monkey sounds in the background. And talking about how Andrew Gillum's idea of access to health care is putting the chicken feet under the pillow by night. Jesus Christ. It's obvious the racists think he's a racist. And, you know, given the fact that he did say, let's not monkey this up, I'd say it's a pretty good idea. You know, he's not... Okay, once upon a time, there were sort of gradations of racists in this country. You had your Klansmen walking around in their robes. You know, like Fred Trump, when he was busted at a Klan riot in 1927. There were seven people who were arrested. Fred Trump was one of the people who was arrested. Fred Trump, who lived at the address that Fred Trump, Donald Trump's father, lived at in Queens, was one of the seven arrested, and all seven of the people arrested were wearing Klan robes. Please rest assured, if you're wearing Klan robes, you are a Klansman. They get a little bit uppity about having people wear their regalia and not being one of them. That's what made that particular scene, for instance, in Blazing Saddles so good, so hilarious. Or the sketch that Dave Chappelle did some years back. If you walk around saying things like monkey up, you're probably a racist. But once upon a time, there were your rank and file Klansmen down south, and then there were your bankers and your preachers and your doctors and your lawyers and your accountants, the professional levels of Southern society, and they were racists too, only they didn't wear robes and they called themselves white citizens' councils. So I'd say that between the two, probably Ron Monkey Up DeSantis is your modern day white citizens council racist, and his racism is casual. I mean, he's not going to call somebody that word that Andrew Gillum had to spell out there on the street. He'd never turn to Andrew Gillum and simply use that epithet against him. It's just casually how he thinks of him in his day-to-day life and how he thinks of people who aren't as pale as he is. And the thing about that kind of racism is it runs bone deep. Let's finish with the clip.
Mr. DeSantis, if I would ask the audience to please let Mr. DeSantis now respond.
The conference I attended was keynoted by a Medal of Honor recipient named Clint Romichet.
Well, isn't that special? I went to a racist conference, but I get a pass for it because somebody who won the Medal of Honor was there. In what fucking universe? He kind of looks like it. Steve in New York says, in the Florida debate, when Gillum said that, I thought DeSantis was going to cry. Well, I mean, it was a beatdown. It was stone cold. And it left a mark. As Tracy says, mic drop! And if Andrew Gillum had done that, they might have just canceled the election. But they're not going to cancel the election because in a state like Florida, which, remember, is probably where the bombs came from, in a state like Florida, racism is still not a negative, but a political positive for Republicans. Let's be very, very clear on that. And the race is, you know, a point or so between the two men. Or between the man and the racist. Because I'm not going to cut him the slack that Andrew Gillum did. Andrew Gillum can't say outright that he thinks Ron Monkey Up DeSantis is a racist. Because then the tender-hearted maggots would start boo-hooing so profusely, it might flood it might very well, you know, flood Central Florida. But I can say it because, well, what was the standard that was once used by Caribou Barbie? Oh yeah, he pals around with racists. Pals around with. It's the company that he keeps. You'll see what I mean.
It was not a racial conference. That is an absolute lie. And I'm not going to sit here and take this nonsense from a guy like Andrew Gillum, who always plays the victim, who's going out and attacking, aligning himself with groups who attack our men and women in law enforcement.
Time out, because there was a little bit of dog whistling there that's easy to miss. Always plays the victim. That's a dog whistle. Because you don't have to go very far in white-wing circles to hear complaints of, I don't know what it is with these black people all the time got to be playing the victim and talking about how about slavery and stuff, and about how black lives matter more than police lives matter. I don't know why they got to play the victim like that. As the crocodile tears begin to flow. Well, I'm sorry, Tracy. Another email with the subject line, stay out of my head, Bob. Cleavon Little saying, where the white women at? While wearing a hood and a robe. Oh, says Tracy, I love it. Yeah, let me see if I can. I bet I've got that. You mean this, Tracy?
Hey, where are the white women at?
That one? Mm-hmm. Cherish for a moment that kind of reasoning. It wasn't a racial conference, so I am not a racist. He still hasn't addressed the problem because he's pretty well boxed in. That there are people out there who support him because they think he's a racist. Or they think that he will favor the racists. That one just kind of goes by the board. But that logic. And notice the use of the word racial. It wasn't a racial conference. Well, how many racial conferences are there? Not many, at least not that aren't convened by racialists. No, racists. Yeah, racists. White supremacists. So you get if you're Ron Monkey Up DeSantis, you claim a pass if you go to a conference hosted by a racist that doesn't have racist content? Is that how? So if the Klan puts on a horticultural conference on proper care and feeding of rare orchids, and you show up for that and you know that it's being run by the Klan, but you're also really into orchids, you're not a racist if you go to the Klan's orchid seminar? Have I got that right? Yeah, I think so, yeah.
this nonsense from a guy like Andrew Gillum,
a guy
who
like
always plays the victim, who's going out and attacking, as you aligning himself with groups who attack our men and women in law enforcement, attack our military. He still will not disavow the Dream Defenders. None of these things people are saying did I endorse. He endorsed the Dream Defenders.
Who are the Dream Defenders? And, you know, there's a credible argument to be made that Israel is an apartheid state. Now, we can have a civil discussion of it, but in this case, what Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis is saying is that you can't even discuss whether the policies of the right-wing government of Israel constitute an apartheid state. You can't even discuss that. Free speech for him, but not free speech for people who want to talk about the tormented, miserable of the earth Palestinians. No, sorry.
Defenders, and they endorsed him, and that is wrong.
Mr. Gillum.
Yes. Yeah, happy to speak on that. So first of all, he continues to attempt to manipulate my record to mean that I'm against law and order. First of all, under my leadership as the mayor of the city of Tallahassee,
uh-oh,
we hired 50 new law enforcement officers. We connected those law enforcement officers hand in glove with the community through community policing. In my city, we're experiencing a five-year low in our crime rate. He described in the last debate a city run amok, and the political fact had to correct him on that as well. What Mr. DeSantis shows is he simply has no relationship with the truth.
Oh! Well, I mean, I'll take issue with Andrew Gillum on that. He has a relationship with the truth. He doesn't care much for it. Even if you don't like someone or something, you still have a relationship with it. Yeah. And, of course, Andrew Gillum was Bible-raised, as was I, so he knows his verses. When he says he has no relationship with the truth, he's alluding to that selfsame verse I mentioned a little bit ago. The truth is not in them.
In Tallahassee, we hired 50 new law enforcement officers. We connected those law enforcement officers hand in glove with the community through community policing. In my city, we're experiencing a five-year low in our crime rate. He described in the last debate a city run amok, and the political fact had to correct him on that as well. What Mr. DeSantis shows is he simply has no relationship with the truth. He doesn't have it here as a candidate, and he certainly wouldn't have it as the governor, but we won't have to worry about that because we'll retire him on November 6th and keep it moving.
That's just a series of body blows. That's amazing. I mean, Ron DeKlantis was on the mat. And it really was one of those situations where you just kind of wish the moderator would call the match. And then, of course, a little bit of a follow-up, because I mentioned it on the program a couple of nights ago. Wait a minute, let me get some email here. Arthur says, again, did you just say Gillum won the debate? Yeah, Andrew Gillum mopped the floor with Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis. Arthur says, I heard a very tiny piece of it. Scott in San Diego says, in regard to DeKlantis' racism, it's quite likely even more insidious than blatant racism. His is an attitudinal racism. That's a good phrase. That's kind of what I was going at. A racism of presumption. An unthinking racism, and a racism that's inherent, baked in. I think this kind of racism is readily apparent to other racists, but for DeSantis himself, he would never, not on his worst day, admit it or recognize it. Instead, he coats it in layer upon layer of self-righteousness and sublime whiteness, as if that would diminish it in any meaningful way. Sublime whiteness. That's a good turn of phrase, Scott. Uh, Heather in Michigan says, hi, white woman with no hood or robe. I'm here. I'm behind Gillum. Same here. It could mark a profound shift in Florida politics. You know, someday there will be a black governor of Mississippi. Someday there will be a black governor of Alabama. There may very well be a black governor of Georgia. And if by some occurrence, I hate to say miracle, Stacey Abrams can overcome the voter suppression perpetrated by Brian Kemp in Georgia, and Andrew Gillum can overcome the margin created by Nazis and Klansmen and skinheads and alt-right and white nationalists and white supremacists and whatever else they're calling themselves these days. If he can muster a big enough coalition to bury all that, it will be a great day. 157 years later for the South. And the politicians, the talented young black politicians, exist in those states to someday, and hopefully someday soon, make it happen. Oh, I'm sorry, not James, John. Scott went and dug that up for me. 1 John 2:4. He that saith, I know him, and keepeth not his commandments, is a liar, and the truth is not in him. Yeah, didn't you quote that, Scott? Yeah. I don't know why I thought James. Of all the books of the Bible, in the New Testament at least, there is a considerable amount of existential good to be said for what's going on in the book of James. Named, of course, after Jesus' baby brother. Or maybe older brother. We really don't know. No, it's got to be his baby brother because Mary was a virgin when God raped her. I forgot that. Our apologies. Steve in New York, subject line, Gillum. I sense a presidential candidacy down the road. Well, I kind of sense it too, but let's get him through this one first, shall we? Meanwhile, in New York, Lee writes, subject line, orchids. Subject of the Klan Orchid Conference, vanilla. Yeah, but even a vanilla bean is black. Mm-hmm. Yeah, by the way, have you heard that phrase? The Proud Boys are being referred to as Vanilla ISIS. Clever people. Clever, clever people. That was an inspiring moment. But yeah, we got them. Like I said, I covered it the other night. So therefore, goodbye, Megyn Kelly. And no one seems to be particularly torn up about seeing Megyn Kelly go bye-bye from NBC. And, you know, when you consider her blackface comments in the context of all the other racist comments she's made over the course of her petulant career, you think about that line, what is it, a dog returneth ever to its vomit? Yeah, she needs to go back to Fox. But here's the here's the part that makes you want to eat dirt and run rabbits. When NBC News, I mean, talk about your wingnut welfare. When NBC signed her to a contract, they signed a contract with her. A contract was negotiated with her through her agent that said, no matter what she does, even if you fire her, you have to pay her the full contract price. What a vehicle for a fraud. What a vehicle for a monumental con. So all Megyn Kelly has to do is go to NBC, say as many obnoxious, hateful things as she can, make it absolutely impossible for NBC to either keep her or whatever reputation it has, and so that you have to get rid of her. And then the price of getting rid of her is $69 million. See, if the blackface stunt hadn't worked, I guess she would have had to go on and actually use the word and not spell it out like Andrew Gillum did to get him to fire her so that she would never have to work another day in her fucking life and have $69 million to play with. That's the stuff of a movie script. That's brilliant. If you're a, you know, from the standpoint of, if that's your game is to just run a con. She had a contract. She knew she had a contract that made it such that anything she said that was objectionable got her paid $69 million, and the sooner she got canned, the more free money she got. Oh, there were reports that she was sobbing so loudly in her office in 30 Rock that she could be heard one floor below. You know, that's the thing about hearing things a floor below. Things that sound like one thing can be quite often another. At a distance, sometimes it's hard to tell sobbing from
$69 million. Oh, $69 million. Oh.
See what I mean? $69 million.
And all she had to say is, what is racist, and defend blackface. And she gets paid $69 million. Oh, help me, Jesus.
Those NBC sources didn't realize that wasn't crying, that was laughing. All the way to the damn bank. One NBC staffer told the Washington Post, everyone's feeling is, even if you have to pay her the remainder of her contract, pay her. You can save face with this entire thing. Just get rid of her. Another person speaking to the Post said, you know, we try to produce a segment and then she goes off the rails. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry. I misread that. It wasn't her who was sobbing loudly. It was her producer, Jackie Levin, who was bawling in her own office on Tuesday night because of the hurt she felt because of what Megyn Kelly had said, because Megyn Kelly doesn't give a fuck. And so on the one hand, you get a report that says that Megyn Kelly is in the process of negotiating a return to where? Yeah, of course, Fox. I mean, Roger Ailes is gone now, so on the other hand, there's another report that says Fox says, oh, hell no. An article in the Daily Mail, take the source for what it is, contains the following. There are tentative conversations underway about Kelly returning to Fox News, whose viewers despise what they perceive as political correctness. And remember, that's how she framed it. I've never been PC. And I still say to this day that PC is just a code word for why can't we say that word that Andrew Gillum had to spell letter by letter in public and get away with it. We just want to say that word. I mean, we're just white people who want to say that word anytime we want to say that word, and we don't want to be criticized for it. That's what PC means when a Republican uses the phrase. Brian Steinberg is the TV editor at Variety, and Brian Steinberg reached out to Fox. And the response from Fox about a possible Megyn Kelly return was, "We are extremely happy with our entire lineup," which you can translate from Foxies as, "Jesus Christ, we're hemorrhaging advertisers with Laura Ingraham as it is. What, we want to bring her on and lose advertisers we don't even have yet?" Oh, cowbell for Laurel. Ooh, another rhyme. I had a note from Dr. John, by the way, who said he's totally down with the idea of doing an entire program in iambic pentameter. I need to learn to... Some of my monologue needs to learn to remain inner, but whatever. Yeah, I know. Wouldn't that be fun? But no, Laurel gets cowbell. Megyn Kelly just won the MAGA Millions lottery. Ooh. I told you it was good. Mm-hmm. Scott points out, I'm guessing she also has what's come to be known as the Don Imus clause. Hey, you know Don Imus clause is white. Yeah. Sorry. The company recognizes that the artist is hired to engage in provocative commentary. You know, that's really not what NBC was looking for at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. At least I'm guessing. By the way, Robert in Australia, subject line, Proud Boys. Gavin McInnes, the founder of the Proud Boys, is trying to come to Australia on a comedy tour. We are petitioning the government to refuse him entry. Good. Don't give up. Because that man's about as funny as a hemorrhoid. Ron and Raleigh with a note. So, two people won the lottery yesterday. That's some Jed Clampett walking around money is what that is. You know she'll still try to inflict herself on us somewhere. Oh, I'm thinking maybe One America News or, hey, maybe she could push that brunette out of her job at CBN, and I'm pretty sure creepy old Uncle Mary and Pat Robertson, former liquor supply officer, would just love to ogle her across, you know, from one wingback chair to another, and they could just bounce racism right off of each other, and it'd be like that part of the old video game Pong when it really gets intense, and the little digital ping pong ball starts to tick 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 tick, and it's just too much to keep up. Silent R. Lamar says, as a black man, I'd like to see an Hispanic, Latino, Asian person for the next president of the United States, just for flavor. Oh, yeah, on the Megyn Kelly BS, America is all about the damn money, and we trust you after you dog us. Jack in Shreveport. Yeah, I know, Silent R. Lamar, I know. Jack in Shreveport, Megyn Kelly. First hearing she was hired, but now hearing about the contract, too, makes me wonder about how brain-damaged the management is. Is she under the umbrella of Andrew Lack? There was a lot of apprehension about him being hired. He's the one apparently doing the firing now. And even convened an internal NBC town hall inside the studios where the theater where Saturday Night Live is broadcast. and laid into and laid into what she said, what Megyn Kelly said, with a will. And the most shocking part of it is the number of people at NBC who absolutely unloaded on her. Al Roker, who won't say anything bad about anybody, unloaded on her. Jacob Soboroff, who, as far as I can tell, does pretty solid reporting, and was on that panel when she made the comment, he got out in front of it early and said, I'm sorry that I didn't say more to point out what an awful comment that was. And I apologize. No, if anybody was offended, none of that Republican non-apology bullshit. He just straight up owned his participation and apologized. And that earns some respect. Oh, don't start, Randy in PA. Iambic pentameter, do it in haiku. Haiku on the fly. Clarity Mike could do haiku on the fly. I don't know about me. Tracy, meanwhile, says, so yeah, they got rid of the sister for Nazi Barbie. The Washington Post pointing out that the fact that they ditched an African-American woman for Nazi Barbie, Megyn Kelly, has re-entered the discussion. Headline from the Washington Post, as the Megyn Kelly drama intensifies, Tamron Hall's awkward NBC exit is back in the spotlight. Someone tweeting, another mimosa, please, Tamron Hall. Another individual tweeting, justice for Tamron Hall, period. They let Tamron Hall's contract run out, didn't show any interest in renewing it, and said, goodbye now. Right. Steve in New York says, yeah, Megan may not be PC, but she is dim-wit. Well played. A little jingle for that. Silent R. Lamar says, it's okay to say the N-word when you're white, around whites, but if you want your teeth in a jar, say it around black folks. See, they're having a hard time understanding that. They want to live in a world of 155-plus years ago. It's just a fact. talking about the $69 million, Brother Deacon Asa says, heck, we can even get Bob Kincaid to say some unsavory things for that kind of scratch. Not that. No. Because, see, the idea of what is racist and the idea of, why can't we go in black? You know, when I was a little kid, it was okay to go in blackface. I never did Halloween in blackface, even in Alabama. And maybe some kids I knew did. I've searched my memory. Can't recall any, but I've actually been to more than a couple of racism trainings and teachings and seminars. And because I have, I'm not likely to ever ask the question that Megyn Kelly asked. Maybe that's part of it. Maybe Megyn Kelly really does need to sit in a room and not talk at people, but listen to them and let them explain to her what racism is, since she asked the question, what is racist? Well, the first thing you have to learn is that as a person who is cloaked in white privilege, you do not get to define what is racist. And I try to bear that in mind. I'm always going to be imperfect at it. And I've been told that being imperfect is okay as long as you're trying to be mindful. As long as you're trying to be aware and in the moment and in the world and in the realization that it exists, that it's not something that used to exist, that it is something that is around us and will crop up and grow and multiply if it is not kept in check. Nobody expects perfection. And to acknowledge that one probably bears the seeds of it is a beginning. Megan asks, N-word and the Y people. Since these people want to say the word with no penalty, does this mean it'll be okay to start calling them crackers? Might be fun to see how the reactions change when they're actually on the receiving ends of racially charged insults. Even cracker can't carry the freight that that other word carries. There's actually an old etymology to it that suggests that cracker isn't even a race term. But, even being willing to look at somebody and say, why are you doing that? That's inappropriate. Like, you know, during their college years when they were in their Halcon days and the grandchildren of the coin would show up in Nazi garb. To have somebody there at, say, the St. Andrews University say, I'll not be staying at this party with you, Your Highness, seeing as how you're aping a Nazi. Making it clear that it's unacceptable. Lee in New York says, the person I blame for Megyn Kelly is that NBC executive who saw a valuable asset. That was the bigger idiot. What did that executive expect? Precisely. You knew what you were hiring when you... And if there's... what's the defense to that? Well, I thought she was just being that way because that's how Fox is, and she needed to do that to be a job, to keep her job. We thought she'd turn into a normal human being if we brought her to a decent network. Really? Update from David in South Carolina, Stan, with a visual for me, a JPEG of Opa-locka, Florida, down between Miami and Fort Lauderdale. David says, bombs thought to have originated at Opa-locka. Ironic how close that is to Parkland. Of course, the bomber may not live near or could easily live south or north of Opa-locka, since the post office is right off I-95. Could live anywhere. But still, it caught my eyes. I've attended computer seminars at Nova Southeastern U, which is also in the general area. Well, how far is it from Rush Limbaugh's Southern Command mansion, David? How far is it from Mar-a-Lago? As to that line, I'm not PC, Earther says, I think that also means we're not allowed to say how all the black and brown folk take all the tax money we provide and live for free. They're parasites. We're not allowed to say that. We think it all the time, but we're not allowed to say it. Meanwhile, from Marty, stop telling us never to go to Halloween in blackface, Bob. People keep asking, how did Megyn Kelly get on at NBC? Remember who owns NBC and where their campaign contributions go? I thought it was an easy choice. Well said. From Silent R. Lamar, word of advice for Ms. Kelly. Keep your ass in America. Wrong country at the wrong time. Welcome to racism. As to the term cracker, courtesy of our ad hoc research department, in this case, Steve from Georgistan. Cracker, the old standby of Anglo insults, was first noted in the mid-18th century, making it older than the United States itself. Used to refer to poor whites, particularly those inhabiting the frontier regions of Maryland, Virginia, and Georgia. It is suspected it was a shortened form of whip cracker, since the manual labor they did involved driving livestock with a whip, not to mention the other brutal arenas where those skills were employed. Over the course of time, it came to represent a person of lower caste or criminal disposition. In some instances, it was used in reference to bandits and other lawless folk. I've also read, Steve, that it refers to the cracked corn diet of borderers, as Joe Bagent would have referred to them, who moved into the Allegheny front and across the Allegheny front and into the Appalachians. Remember Jimmy Cracked Corn and I Don't Care? Mm-hmm. Subject line, remember, from Ron in Raleigh. Speaking of Blazing Saddles, when Sheriff Bart said, watch that boy shit, redneck, it doesn't have to be the N-word. Other words can carry some pretty heavy freight, too. Boy being one of them. Uncle. Because, you see, over the years, white people have found ways to freight otherwise innocuous words in the English language with all the hatreds with which they are bound up. Yeah. Oh, let's see here. Yeah, going back to Stacey Abrams, Lee in New York says, you know, Governor Abrams would allow people in Georgia to vote. It could remove the red voter suppression veneer from a true blue state. Good point. Thanks very kindly to Charlene, who says, here's $20 toward that generous $50 challenge. Making hay and happy 13th to the horn. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you very kindly. So while we're not fundraising, if another $30 rolls in, that will meet Johannes's 13th birthday challenge. And it'll be a nice little capper to the month of October. Thank you, John. Thank you, Charlene. And thank you very kindly to Ralps for the 10th Trash Fitzwalker Stand Challenge. Thank you, Ralps. We'll be broadcasting for another month, because that's how we go, is month to month. Someday maybe we'll do it a different way, but right now that's how it has to happen. So, you know, the phone lines are open if you want to engage in some conversation. Let me run over to the stress line and see who we've got there. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. It's Heather. How are you?
Hey, Heather. How are you, dear?
Oh, I'm good. I am behind Gillum, obviously, and I'm glad Megan's gone. Well, gonna be gone.
Yeah, I don't think she's gonna be back on the air that her program today and her program tomorrow are in the are canned programs from months back, I believe.
If she's, oh, geez, she was terrible. I mean, and she was terrible from day one, but why the hell did they hire her in the first place? That's my question.
Well, they wanted to try to draw some cranky old racist demographics away from Fox. And they thought that maybe they could draw some audience that otherwise might not be watching. You know, they were trying to compete with Fox. They wanted some of that Fox money and some of that Fox audience.
Right. I mean, I can see them wanting some of the audience, but, that woman? I just, oh, my God. They could have hired somebody from the morning show that did an interview with Trump over the phone for a while, for a little bit, and I guess they had to cut him off. Why couldn't they have hired somebody from what's on that crew? My goodness. I mean, I had read somewhere, some tweet, somebody flat out said they didn't know who Megyn Kelly was until yesterday or the day before. And they said what they saw was a woman with character. And I about died. I was definitely not, you know, I about died. I died laughing, actually. I mean, that was a mess. Them, I think NBC hiring her was a mess, and they...
Well, I'm trying to remember that.
Hold on, Heather,
I'm trying to remember the timing of it. Did they hire her before or after her Donnybrook with Donnie Trump, in which he talked about her bleeding from her eyes and blood all over the place, blood, 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 blood?
I think it was after that.
Maybe that was part of it then?
Maybe, but, you know, they were hoping... Maybe they were hoping she'd change, but me no thinky so.
Easy there.
Me no thinky so.
Yeah. Let's not.
How do you say something doesn't change its stripes?
Oh well, yeah. You say a tiger doesn't change its stripes, and I add. Nor do skunks.
True. It just, and then, of course, they have that lovely man named Chuck Todd, who I call Chuck Toad, but, you know, I don't have cable news, because if I didn't, I watch some of the stuff that is on there, I would scream. At least Chuck Toad, if I had to watch Chuck Todd every day, I'd scream.
I turn off MSNBC about the time when Mrs. Greenspan starts, and I don't turn it on again until I get off the air.
I can't blame you. I really don't blame you. That's just, it's bad.
If I should happen not to be on the air, you know, I'll watch Chris Hayes, I'll watch Rachel, but no, I can't abide Chuck Todd, I can't abide Tweety, Mrs. Greenspan gives me the fan Todds, just no.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's awfully good to hear from you, Heather. Has it become full on frozen freaking winter in Michigan yet?
It's still cold, no snow yet, but who knows. And I got some new glasses.
Oh, yay, that's good.
It's kind of funny because I'm trying to get used to them. But, you know, it'll happen eventually.
Haven't bounced off any walls yet or anything, have you?
Oh, not yet.
All right, well, you have yourself a lovely evening. It's good to hear from you.
All righty, talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye now. That's Heather. Irrepressible Heather calling from Michigan. So both lines are open, and I'm inclined at this point in time to take a break because it is, after all, Thursday. And that means that the Green News Report is on deck. Tweety, MSNBC, question mark. Chris Matthews, Scott. Chris Matthews. Let's take a break and see which way the conversation wants to go. All the lines are open if you want to engage in some thorn in the side Thursday gab. And we'll see where else we need to get to. In the name of this this attempt at liberal, non-commercial, progressive, independent, conversation-based broadcasting. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Stick around. Holler in if you want to.
Liberal, non-commercial.
Oh, there I am again. I hate it when that happens.
Conversation.
That's the live program running a couple of seconds in delay. Yeah. Green News Report. We'll be back. I'm Bob.
It's Thursday, October 25, 2018.
180 mile per hour winds.
Category 5 super typhoon U2 slams into Mariana Islands and other U.S. territories as the 2018 hurricane season is now the most powerful ever recorded.
Could open ExxonMobil up to further lawsuit.
New York State sues ExxonMobil for defrauding investors about climate change. Plus,
we are the first generation that has known how to fix this problem, but we are the last generation that will actually be able to do something about it.
Canada places a price on pollution with a national carbon tax.
All of those really big stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
That is true. There are scientists on both sides. On one side, all the scientists. On the other, one guy who runs a blog called Real True American Science Eagle.Jesus.
This is your Green News Report.
Forecast rapture.
Okay, Desi Doyen, I think you got about 3 or 4 top stories to fit into today's report, so I'll just shut up.
Okay. Well, up first, Hurricane Willa made landfall on Mexico's Pacific coast as a powerful Category 3 on Tuesday, and then Super Typhoon U2, one of the strongest cyclones in history, rapidly intensified into a Category 5 before slamming into the U.S. territory Mariana Islands on Wednesday.
With gusts up to 220 miles per hour.
Yes, it was the strongest typhoon to pass near the U.S. territories of Saipan and Tinian. Now, if it seems to you like we've had more major hurricanes than usual this year, you are right. In 2018, both the Atlantic and Pacific hurricane seasons are the most powerful ever recorded in the Accumulated Cyclone Energy Index, which measures the combined intensity and duration of all tropical storms and hurricanes that form in any given year. 2018 shattered the previous record set in 1992. One of those storms, Category 4 Hurricane Wallaka, has obliterated a tiny island in the Hawaiian archipelago. Federal scientists confirmed this week that Wallaka washed away 11-acre East Island this month, which was a critical habitat for endangered Hawaiian monk seals, sea turtles, and birds. Scientists called its loss a huge blow to conservation efforts.
Unfortunately, it's not the last of the islands that are likely to disappear.
Meanwhile, the U.S. Supreme Court this week handed a temporary victory to the Trump administration, issuing a temporary administrative stay on a landmark climate liability lawsuit brought by 21 young people against the federal government. In the lawsuit, 21 young people aged 22 and younger allege that the federal government has violated their constitutional rights by failing to act on man-made climate change and protect their life, liberty, and property, since they and all of today's children will be forced to deal with the consequences of climate change for the rest of their lives. The trial had been scheduled to begin on Monday, and it's unclear if it will be allowed to proceed. But there is some good news. New York State Attorney General Barbara Underwood on Wednesday filed a lawsuit against oil giant ExxonMobil for deceiving investors by downplaying the expected financial risks of climate change.
Well, what took you so long?
The suit alleges that Exxon defrauded shareholders, deceiving them into believing the company was managing the risk that stricter emissions regulations might pose to its bottom line. In reality, Underwood says, it was, quote, intentionally and systematically underestimating or ignoring those risks.
So they pretended first that climate change didn't exist, then they pretended that they got it taken care of, and the whole time they were lying to investors about all of it.
Exactly. The Center for International Environmental Law called the suit, quote, a wake-up call for investors who continue to bet on fossil fuels, and pretends a new wave of climate litigation.
This could cost ExxonMobil hundreds of millions of dollars, even billions of dollars, unless the Supreme Court kills it all.
Finally, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau this week announced that his administration will implement a national carbon tax beginning next year to put a price on the pollution that causes dangerous global warming.
It is free to pollute, so we have too much pollution.
In a press conference, Trudeau listed the multiple billion-dollar extreme weather events, wildfires, and floods hitting Canada in recent years, and called action on climate change a moral and economic imperative. And also,
it is common sense that if you put a price on something you don't want, pollution, people will pollute less. And if there are costs associated for average families, we will more than compensate those families for those costs.
Trudeau's new climate action incentive plan will return all carbon tax revenue directly to households to support families in making the transition away from fossil fuels. He says most families will get back more than they pay in higher energy costs.
First pot for the entire country and now a carbon tax. I am moving to Canada. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
On take off. Take off to the great white north. Take off. It's a beauty way to go. Take off to the great white north.
God, I haven't heard that in a long time. Halfway through the program this evening, about 28 minutes before the hour. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday, and I wanted to, let's see here. No, okay. Let's go over and check in with Todd. Hey, Todd.
How's it going?
I'm okay, I think.
Okay, well, good. You know, the weather's changing and all that good stuff.
Yeah, it makes me cranky.
I understand that, and I think, you know what, I think it's a function of age, too. It gets worse as we get older.
Oh, yeah, I was actually pondering that earlier. If there's any upside to it, it's that as you get older, time goes faster. So maybe, you know, every day after the autumnal equinox is shorter, but as you move toward the winter solstice, you know, after the solstice, the days start getting a little bit longer, and I'm already looking forward to spring.
Yeah, that's the way to look at it.
Got to have a sunshiny outlook, because I'm Bob Kincaid, little ray of fucking sunshine.
There you are, and don't you fart sparkles and stuff?
Well, we don't try. I gave that up. I gave that up.
Oh, you gave that up after you turned 36. I forgot.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Yeah, but
actually 52. 52 in the numerology of the Mesoamerican cultures is a sheaf of years. So once I passed my first sheaf of years, I decided to put away foolish things. like farting sparkles.
That's a wonderful age for that. That makes all the sense. No, I'm not being funny now. That, because that's about when I think folks are ripened. You know, 32, you kind of know what's going on by that.
No, 52.
You know what I mean?
52.
Oh, 52.
Yeah, 52. 32.
Oh, well.
Because a lot of the numerical systems that they used was based on groups of 13. And four groups of 13 is 52. And a 52 years was the calendar round in one of the calendars they used. And so 52 was referred to as a sheaf, S-H-E-A-F, of years.
Interesting. A sheaf. Isn't that a sheaf of wheat? Isn't that a sheaf?
Yeah, or grain.
Or grain?
Yeah. Stalks.
Mm-hmm. The stalks are all and they're wound up through one end, and the grain part is at the top.
Right.
Yeah, sheaf of wheat. So I hope you're satisfied now. You and all your liberal spiel and your liberal violence. You see what you've caused now, right?
Yeah, you see what you did, don't you, Todd?
What happened?
Yeah, well, no, it's obviously on you.
That was good, Bob. That was so quick. That was very good. But you know, honestly, this person, I could not believe what I was hearing. So he's just taken to being, and he said something though today I thought was really interesting. When I say he, I'm talking about our leader, the person who's supposed to just
the God Emperor,
the God Emperor, right? The one who's supposed to say, you know, I apologize for all the fiery rhetoric that that's been emanating from me over the past few months, and I think we all need to kind of calm down a little bit. But see, that's what a leader would do. But you know, he's support. Support is someone who comes after the fact and apologizes and says, "Well, we got to do this, we have to do that." That's support. You understand the difference between a leader and support?
Oh, I think I do. I don't think he does.
Well, I think that's a good answer. Yeah. I'm not seeing people holding him accountable for this at all. You know, that was kind of
the thesis. I'm glad you mentioned that, Todd, because you know sometimes I get sidetracked around here. But one of the things that I wanted to make clear in the course of in the course of the filibobster was that there's a lot of things we don't know about the bombings. But the one thing that we do know about the bombings is that the person who is ultimately responsible for creating the culture in which that was became acceptable to someone or some group, the person who is ultimately responsible for it will not be charged and will not be even challenged. And that, of course, is Donald Trump. Did you catch Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags' false binary on the issue? Did you happen to see that?
No, I didn't. I want you to fill me in, please.
Well, President Trump is no more responsible for these bombings than Bernie Sanders was responsible for that man who shot poor Steve Scalise at that baseball field.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, pump the fucking brakes. Bernie Sanders, and I realize there are people who love Bernie, there are people who hate Bernie, because he's a polarizing figure, he just is. I agree with a lot of his ideas.
Bernie Sanders, I'm trying to, wait a minute, that's not even, you can't even make that argument.
Well, but she did, and maggots get to. But here's the point. Bernie Sanders did not run around the country saying things like, beat the hell out of him. If you beat him up, I'll pay your legal bills. Or describing the free press in this country as enemies of the state, enemies of the people. He didn't do that. He hasn't done any of the things that Donald Trump has done that directly plays into the vilification of, he hasn't vilified anybody. the president of the United States.
That's why I got loud.
That's all he does is vilify people.
We have Democratic operatives who you could say, okay, like, man, you know, and don't get me wrong, I'm all for confronting people in public places because they're public figures. As long as you don't touch them, you can say what you want to them in public spaces. But, you know, all right, fine. You can say people are saying violent things. But, I mean, this was way – Bernie Sanders was not even saying nothing. All he was doing was being himself, being political. That's it. I don't even – how could that come out of her mouth? You can't even make the argument.
Well, it was the first time – it was downright Soviet. It was the first time she'd been seen in ages. And there we go. Tracy says false equivalency. Ding, 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 ding. There we go.
Yeah. That's it. And Tracy, that's a perfect example of false equivalency because there's no correlation between Bernie's either verbal or physical behavior in terms of being violent against the other party. And like I said, and even I don't know any Democrat who has said anything. I can't. I'm hard pressed. I just I'm trying to be fair. You know, I try to be fair. I will pull. I'll usually go to C-SPAN because around I'm usually kind of tied up that time of afternoon. But I go back and listen to when they give her her press when she does have a press conference. You know, they put everything on C-SPAN's website. And this is what we're talking about. But, you know, I was shocked this morning, the question on Washington Journal, and I don't know if Steve heard it in Georgia, was how can we cool down this political rhetoric? I'm paraphrasing, but that's roughly what the question was. And I was disturbed that not one GOP caller could just say, well, yeah, the president has really been out of line and you know, his – just something, something. Not one of them. Almost everyone said the Democrats with their violent, vile language. And I mean, they went on and then they started talking about Hillary Clinton and Obama talking about if you bring a gun, I'll bring a knife and Eric Holder. And not one of them, not one. And so now I'm back to this Borg thing. These people really, it's a mental health issue. They think differently than we think.
Well, I mean, I think you're throwing the word think around pretty damn liberally, Todd. But, you know, that's and again, they're hypocrites. Okay, so when they say let's cool the rhetoric, what you know, you've got to use your universal translator for that. And you got to dial it over to maggot. And what that means is everybody stop talking about real facts that apply to Donald J. Trump. Everybody stop talking about how he vilifies people. Everybody stop talking about how he encourages violence. Everybody stop criticizing him for ripping off the American people and spending the entire miserable expanse of his miserable, rotten, stinking, filthy, never should have been born life making other people miserable. Everybody stop talking about that, and then our side will stop sending bombs through the mail.
Perfect, exactly. And Trump knows. I hate to use the orange man knows that. The orange fascist knows that because in one of his statements today, he said, and this negative and often fake news coverage, this constant negative barrage. And I'm thinking, wow. It's negative because you consistently engage in negative and antisocial behaviors verbally and physically. Therefore, any real news will be negative of you. It's really simple. We know where we're going with this. It's so sad. So he just digs in is what he does. You know.
Because he can't back down. If he backs down, he loses. Everything with Donald Trump is a zero-sum game, okay? He's either winning or losing. There's no coexistence. There's no cooperation. And that has been the story of his life. You can't get along with the guy. You either acquiesce to him or you fight him. And that goes all the way from billionaire banks down to the guy who shampoos the carpets. You have to fight him for every penny. I mean, have you seen the story about his $10,000 portrait?
Yeah, I have.
You know, there's a lawsuit going in New York by the attorney general there against his skeevy, dodgy, faked up, frauded up, rubed up, ginned up foundation. And in court, the lawyer for the Trump Foundation and for Donald Trump has pled that the reason he bought a $10,000 6-foot-tall painting of himself and used foundation funds to pay for it was because he placed the opening bid at $10,000 for the painting and nobody else bid on it, therefore he had to purchase it. This is, of course, pure bullshit. But what does that what does that say about him? It's a beautiful painting of me. Who wants a painting of me?
That's incredible.
I'll open the bidding at $10,000 for this painting of me. Doesn't some museum want a painting of me? Anybody? Bueller. Sold.
Look how many levels that shit is fucked up on.
Well, go ahead, start.
I mean, first of all, all right, I guess some people want to have a painting of themselves. I guess some people. That shit would make me feel uneasy. I'm sorry. Even more than a few pictures around the house of yourself. Come on. I mean, how many do you need? But to have a contract to have a painting of that size of yourself, and then not only that, but then try to offset the price through fraud. Through foundation, you know, that takes a hell. This I'm not surprised, but this is exactly the worst case scenario. When anybody who knew this person, when we saw that he was going to be president, it was like, this is going to be ugly, because he has no constraints, and he's a dumbass, and you can't tell him shit. And like you were saying, we all know people like this who maybe they have. Maybe they have money, maybe they don't, but you can be around them as long as they're controlling everything. They have to control the conversation. They have to control the activity, because if they're not, they won't be happy and they'll make everyone else miserable. So when you engage with them, you know you're just going to have to go with the flow until you get tired and you leave. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah.
You know that type of person?
Yeah.
That's who he's just an ass. He's just a damn jack. I can't see. How can somebody live with him?
But there's another side of the equation, and these are the kind of things that just baffle me. There was a segment on MSNBC today. Hallie Jackson is generally not terrible at what she does. Decent reporter, and sometimes I just, you know, I wonder. I honestly don't know how much control the hosts have over what goes on their air. And who they have to talk to. But let me pose a question to you, Todd. What is the point of bringing on a guy who is already demonstrably a racist and a venomous, hardcore supporter of Donald Trump? What is the point of bringing him on to a discussion to ask him if Donald Trump has any responsibility for the hateful tone and tenor of political discourse in this country? What is the point of that? Because, well, let me just ask you. I'm not going to tell you who the guy was. I'm not going to tell you. I'm giving you the idea of the question. Can you already tell me what the answer was going to be? Do you know what his answer was?
He probably didn't agree with the premise of the question.
Right. It's not Trump's fault. What about Eric?
Right.
And then it's this long of whataboutism. And so my question is...
Oh, my God. I hope you're not talking about Matt Schlapp.
I'm talking exactly about Matt Schlapp.
I saw that. And, you know, I was like, I wanted to hit... I felt very uncomfortable watching.
Well, if you're a news organization... What's the fucking point? I mean, is it okay if I ask that?
Okay.
It's like wrestling. It's a predetermined outcome, okay? I've got the clip here. Let me see if I can get it to run. All right?
Okay. Okay.
Responsibility for these attacks. We know that blame lies on whoever sent those envelopes in the mail. So I just want to lay that out there very, very clearly as part of this discussion. What I want to ask you is to pull back more broadly and talk a little bit about the toxic political culture that I think a lot of people would agree we are in right now. Do you believe the president bears any responsibility for that?
Well, first, let me just say, Hallie, that I think what's going on with these bombs is really scary. And people who are in public service and who are public servants deserve to have personal securities. I think we're all worried about the ricin that was sent to Secretary Mattis, that was sent to Ted Cruz,
yeah.
These people who have been chased out of restaurants, that have been told that there's no place in society for them, that they have to literally eat their...
Because, you know, that's the same as getting bombed. Someone speaking unpleasantly to you in a restaurant is the same as getting bombed. They're exactly identical. But you see how he bails into the whataboutism? And it doesn't right. Slow down any. He said.
I saw it.
Yeah. Hoping he could get the clip going again.
Place some more?
Yeah.
Their meals in their home because people attack them. There's so much that's going on. And I think the problem we're going to get into now with your question is who's at fault? And I guess I'm going to pull it back even broader. I think we're all at fault, first of all, because we've lost our manners. Yeah, I myself, I find, have to remind myself, like, we're each human beings and we ought to be treated with some respect. And our society seems to have depersonalized everything. You can't get a cup of coffee anymore without the person and the person buying the coffee having any kind of pleasant exchange. Everything is just down to the transaction. It's true in politics, too.
And that, you know, that in its own right is pure bullshit. I make it a personal policy, Todd, to be as nice as I possibly can, as pleasant as I possibly can in my everyday interactions with people. Because my operating philosophy has always been that if you've got a smile for somebody, if you've got a kind word for somebody, that even though it's just a passing moment, you don't know what kind of day that person's having, but you have a chance to have at least a positive impact. His going for a coffee example there. You know what I do? I say thank
what?
You. And I say, hey, you're doing a great job, and I really appreciate what you do. Thank you very much. And I smile. Now, apparently, Matt Schlapp can't do that. I don't know why, but he can't do that.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And this climate, he missed the boat. And I kept waiting for him to do the right thing. I'm like, he looks like and he sounds like such a normal person. Do you know what I mean? He seems congenial until he opens his mouth.
And so what? No, we are not all responsible for pipe bombs being sent to Democrats and people who have dared to criticize Donald Trump. We are not all responsible for that. The people who did it are responsible, and the people who have made the climate such that people want to do that are responsible.
Okay, and I like the way you prefaced this whole segment about Hallie Jackson and the Schlapp interview, because I agree with you. I've been watching Hallie since she started, and she does ask hard questions if you grade it on a curve as compared to a lot of these other quote-unquote reporters or presenters. You know, she will ask some hard questions. Now, this afternoon, Katie Turr also asked some hard questions, but she actually put her foot down. And she said, no, that's not true. That's just not true. You know, and Joy Reid will do that occasionally. And I think that's the question you were asking, how far can they go?
Well,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, but the larger issue is what purpose does it serve to bring in a lickspittle to do what you already know before the question gets asked what the lickspittle is going to do?
Either you have to put your foot down or you're just fucking around. You have to eviscerate them, let them say their thing, and then just tear them up, which she did not do. Otherwise, they're just wasting time.
That's it. You're just... It's just a waste of time. And, you know, meanwhile, there's the question of, okay, so you want to ask that question, groovy. Why is it that Matt Schlapp is the person you want to ask that question of? This is Matt Schlapp. This is the guy, remember during the Kavanaugh hearings when he took that picture, that close-up photo of senators who happened to be brown or Mazie Hirono, Cory Booker, Kamala Harris. Everybody was brown in the photo. And he tweeted it and said, look at this photo, conservative voters in West Virginia, North Dakota, Indiana, Florida, Missouri, Montana, Michigan, Tennessee, Arizona, Nevada. And people knew what it was immediately. Looks like Matt Schlapp's graduating from racist dog whistles to bullhorns. Matt Schlapp thinks these states have racist voters who could be manipulated by pictures of people who are not white. He epitomizes everything hateful, closed-minded, anti-human, and just plain wrong with what is called conservative today. William the Bloody Crystal said, this is the head of the American Conservative Union, whose spouse is a senior staffer in the Trump White House, making what surely seems to be a straight-up appeal to bigotry.
That's the name of the organization. That's what I was trying to remember. Right, that's who he's affiliated with.
Right.
Within Congress, right? Okay, I couldn't remember the name. Okay. Yeah. Let's remember, about 2 years ago, remember MSNBC took a decidedly right turn. They got rid of Ed Schultz. They got rid of Melissa Harris Perry.
Yep.
So they're not as left-wing consistently as a lot of people like to think they are.
No, the thing. MSNBC is not the liberal Fox, and that's the way it's played.
Correct.
Because you can't be the liberal Fox if you're giving a right-winger your most choice 3 hours of broadcast real estate every fucking morning. You can't. No, you're not.
No.
Okay, because no, Joe Scarborough, no.
He has not arrived. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm a black man. No, he has not arrived. He thinks he's arrived, but he has not arrived, believe me.
Oh, he thinks he's woke.
He ain't woke. That nigga's asleep, man. Come on.
It ain't liberal Fox. But,
no.
Mrs. Greenspan ain't liberal Fox.
Mm-mm.
And since she follows on the heels of my little filthy morning habit, Agnes and I often catch a little bit of Stephanie Rule, too. Steph ain't no liberal neither.
Nope.
Because if you go and look up her bio, she made her bones on derivatives with Deutsche Bank.
That's a Wall Street girl from North Jersey.
I mean, does anybody remember the great economic meltdown of 2008?
And Deutsche Bank, they were guilty of laundering a whole lot of money, including some of Trump's money.
Ding, 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 ding. Anthony Kennedy's kid worked for Deutsche Bank.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're bad actors.
Some huge fine. Their fine was astronomical. They had a huge fine.
It seems like most days now, if you tune in, if you just keep it there on MSNBC after the filthy little habit's over, there she is talking to Brett Stevens, who was a wingnut welfare hire at the New York Times, who doesn't think rape on campus is a big deal and doesn't acknowledge the reality of climate change. That's the liberal Fox?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you ever try to watch Fox, but
I can't.
Do you ever listen to Fox? The best thing they have is, well, besides Shepard, I guess. I don't really watch him. I watch clips. But the Fox News Sunday, it's about, I guess it's the best they have to offer, even though, you know, it depends on who the guests are. You know, it's really pathetic. And it's Fox and Friends. Oh, my God. Remember. You know,
oh, Fox News Sunday. Wait, Fox News Sunday. Is that that program that in my mind is titled Mike Wallace is Spinning in His Grave?
Yes.
Okay.
What
checking.
The hell is my son doing? Yes. Right. Yes.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, Mike Wallace, what the hell is my son doing?
You know, I mean, I've seen him ask a hard question once in a while, but, I mean, usually he just let somebody lie and just go right, breeze right by. But, you know, what can you expect from those people?
And by the way, I had a note from Steve from Georgia Stan. He says, I'm not breaking my arm patting myself on the back, but I always make it a point to tell the 3 a.m. convenience store clerk or the 2 a.m. person at the drive-thru window, thank you. You know, you provide a very valuable service. Sometimes you can see, Steve says, that they're stunned. I suppose they generally don't hear that too often. And that's the point. No, they don't.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, if you're standing in line at the grocery store, nobody does that. Or not nobody, but you know what I mean.
I know what you mean, and people who are what you, you know, described earlier as mindful, which it takes, you have to kind of come within inside of yourself and meditate or whatever, but you know, maybe you don't have to do all
it's
that.
It's just such a tragically short fucking life, Todd.
It is. And you know me, I have to look at it through my lens, and it's about reinforcement, and a little reinforcement goes a long way. And like you said, you know, You might make somebody's day. You don't even know it. Like, I always try to do at least one nice thing for a stranger a day. You know, it's an old lady. Here's your shopping cart. You know, I did that. I had to run out to the store. As a matter of fact, I was talking to Tracy earlier. I didn't even think I was going to call in, but I had to ask you a question. And, you know, and she was shocked, you know, because I could tell the way she was looking at me. You know, I'm this big black guy, right? But I'm going to, and I'm not all that black looking, you know, but whatever. You know, there's this little white lady, and she's coming up, and I could see her feet hurt by the way she was walking. So I was like, you know, because I'm around old people a lot, and there's all kinds of women in my family and stuff like that, and the kids aren't around right now. You know, it's just, like you said, it's just, and it's no sweat off your back. It's just good. It's just good to do something nice and just to see the reaction. And like you said, you never know when somebody's having a hard day. And these people work hard. But nobody, who wants to be doing that? Have you ever tried to be a convenience store clerk?
Actually, I have, and it ain't fun.
No, like Steve said, at the night shift, I lasted one day, overnight, and that was I would call them. I said, "Come get the money, come get the keys. I can't do this."
I did the overnight shift at a Rippy Mart for 3 months one summer during college. Mm-hmm. And you know that. You know, the drunk.
I was in college too. I figured I could just, you know, you figure you can sleep and just, you know, go to take a later class or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Well, you said summer, but yeah. Well, anyway, you know what I'm saying. So yes, you're right.
And you felt and you needed to have eyes in the back of your head because the assholes had come in on Friday and Saturday nights, drunker than Adam's off ox, and think they're being real cool when they're ripping you off.
And they're so slow, and it's like, you think I don't see you putting that beer in your pants,
it's
right?
It's like, okay. Dude, go put it back. Put what back? The beer. Go put the fucking beer back, and I won't call the cops, okay? Okay, man.
What beer? And then when it gets slow, oh, I would get so sleepy.
Dude, you're not that impressive. Put the beer back. And then they give you the lecture on how to get robbed.
Oh, man. You remember that? Giving them, I'm like, what?
Don't leave the store with them. Give them the money and don't leave the store with them. Don't let them take you out of the store. I'm like, and I'm going to prevent that how? So, right.
That must be just corporate. Everybody. Yeah, that's when you start to think, do I really want to do this? But, oh, that's so funny, Bob. I guess if people haven't done it, they don't understand. Oh, that they don't, there's not enough money in the world, man. I started adding it up. And I was like, yeah, I'm not doing this. No.
But, you know, this isn't, you know, this isn't about me, you know, jumping up on the cross or anything. And I don't know if I could do what they do that day in and day out of, because I would feel terribly, terribly meaningless if I was throwing away broadcast time on the likes of Matt Schlepp.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, I just would. And of course, he's one. You know how Ron Monkey Up DeSantis said, you know, he's always the victim. Well, Matt Schlepp is always the victim, and Donald Trump is always the victim. You got to remember, it was Matt Schlepp who threw the snowflake hissy over Michelle Wolf when she ate Donald Trump's lunch at the nerd prom. And got up and walked out. He and Mercedes, his wife.
Mm.
The head of White House Strategic Communications or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. I think that whole exchange, it was telling, because he's not alone in acting like that. But it was shameless. It was just like, he is the problem. And he's just like, what? Why can't you just admit that your guy, the president, the leader of our country, he's the leader. The buck's that he ought to know.
He's such a snowflake. You know, he tweeted at the time of the White House Correspondents' Dinner, my wife at Mercedes Schlapp and I walked out early from the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Enough of the elites mocking all of us. That fucker is an elite. He's a goddamn millionaire.
But he's
the victim?
I suspected he, you know, when I was growing up, there was a Matt Schlapp Chevrolet out in Pennsylvania, right, in Reedman. It's this huge place where every car dealer has a, you know, it's out in the suburbs. I'm pretty sure that's who he's related to, because Schlapp is not a common name, you know. But, yeah, it's pathetic. I don't know what it's, but see, that shows us that nothing will make these folks see things through the lens that we see it, which we call reality. You know, they call reality, they call being truthful, overlooking the truth and just saying nice things about the administration and don't nitpick, don't focus on stealing and graft and theft and racism and Nazis. Don't focus on that. Just focus on the good things. And then everything will be okay. But I have another question, because maybe somebody else wants to talk to you, but I think this is important. And I heard it's been in the Hill, but I also heard Scott bring it up the other night about Trump's cell phones and his cell phone usage and people, you know, Russia and China listening in.
Oh, he had a hissy about that. Trump did. On Twitter,
this is scary. Now, because we know this has been going on for years, that your camera and your microphone can be activated as long as the battery's in the phone. You see.
Well, and the funniest part of his goddamn tweet. Let me see if I can find it real quick, because it's a hoot.
He's a fucking dumbass. I can't believe this shit. Why is he beating Putin again? For what?
By the
for
way, Jimmy on Twitter says, does Todd tweet, tell him I said I liked, what is my son doing with it? there are people who want you on Twitter, dude.
I know. I can't handle Twitter. I would get myself in so much trouble if I was on Twitter. Oh, my God. I would get myself. I can't do it. I'm not ready yet. I'm not ready yet.
Well, I understand.
You know what I mean? I have enough to deal with now.
Well, I mean, I tweet some smartassery, and you know, I also tweet some serious stuff.
Right.
I try not to get in flame wars, because they're just not worth the time.
Right. And this is something I had trouble with the current president. I don't understand that. Now, why didn't he? That was a perfect opportunity for him to do the right thing with the Twitter account. say something presidential. You know, make yourself look better because, you already look like you're such a dad. So, help yourself out. That's not what he did.
Oh, here it is. Here it is. This is the funny one. Okay. The New York Times has a new fake story that now the Russians and Chinese, glad they finally added China, are listening to all of my calls on cell phones, except that I rarely use a cell phone, and when I do, it's government authorized. I like hard lines, just made up more fake news.
He didn't really write that.
Yeah, he did.
Bob, I'm telling you right now, there is no way in the hell the president of the United States wrote
the so-called
that.
Expert.
That sounds like an 8-year-old wrote that.
Maybe, an 11-year-old maybe, I don't know. The so-called experts on Trump over at the New York Times wrote a long and boring article on my cell phone usage that is so incorrect I do not have time here to correct it. I only use government phones and have... But wait. So the thing is, the crux of the article is that he's got a non-secured, non-government-issued cell phone, which he says is fake, news. But in his tweet, he says, I only use government phones and have only one seldom used government cell phone. Story is so wrong.
So he's busted, and he's a master of projection. He cannot be contrite because he's a sociopath. This dude is just. I'm so worried for us. I'm so worried for us. So many. How in the hell can his popularity be this high? This is just unbelievable. This is crazy. But just think what these people can listen to, man. All these conversations when he's in meetings. I hope the folks around him. I can't even trust them. I don't trust them. They're a bunch of terrible people too. I don't know, man. This is much worse than we even see. This is like an iceberg. We see how bad it is, but we have no idea how bad it is.
It's a challenge. It's a challenge to wrap your head around how bad it is, Todd. It just is.
Well, I have good news on the food front.
Oh yes, do tell, please.
So, we're moving into the slow food season now. It's cool out. Well, at least here it is. And I already brought back the club sandwich, bringing that back from the 70s.
Nice, nice. Next up, you'll be calling to tell me about the Monte Cristo you made.
Oh man.
Oh, with that fruit and honey strawberry jalapeno spread on the side. Whoa.
Mm.
Quit it.
See, you know the difference between making a sandwich and building a sandwich.
Oh, sandwiches are built.
See, sandwiches are built. So I'm bringing back that loaded baked potato. And everyone loves it. So, you get the nice big Idaho, the giant ones. The giant ones. They taste better. Clean it up nicely. You bake your potato.
Do you ever do the restaurant thing with it? Because I did learn that trick. What makes those steakhouse baked potatoes so damn good is that they, before they bake them and wrap them and bake them and everything, they roll them in bacon or paint them with bacon grease and then roll them in coarse kosher salt and then wrap them and bake them.
I have not done that.
Oh, it intensifies it.
I have to try that. Definitely. Yeah, I'll do that next time.
And then you proceed from there to your loaded baked potato. Just quit it,
Well, yeah, and this is really simple because and then you could feed everybody because you figure everybody's going to eat maybe one and a half potatoes. So you get your potatoes cooking, and then in a saucepan, you get your Normandy vegetable mix, about maybe one or two bags, depending on how many people you're feeding, and it's cauliflower, carrots, and broccoli. And that steak season, that Montreal steak season.
Oh, it's awesome. It's just beautiful.
It's wonderful on vegetables. It's not just for steak.
Oh, yeah.
So, you let those steam down. And then in a small cast iron skillet. You've already cut your onions up. You let them saute a little while. You let them get translucent. And you put one layer of steakum, okay, to steak them.
Yeah.
And then so then you have vegetables and steak and Parmesan cheese on top of the potato. And you're going to use butter and olive oil, because if you use all butter, you'll probably have a heart attack. So, but, you know, butter and olive oil on your potatoes before you put the things on there. But, oh, my God, is just the aroma, the whole house smells warm. It's wonderful.
Oh, that's a beautiful thing. Well, let me tell you what I've got in mind real quick. Because, you know, it's cool here, but it's not too cool to fool with the grill. And I've got a little bit of the brisket left from the chili.
Chili.
And Agnes and I were talking, and I said, don't touch that. We're just going to keep it in the fridge. And come the weekend, I'm going to go over to Kroger's, and I'm going to get the biggest jalapenos I can find. And chop the tops off the stem end, split them, scrape them. And I said, before I do that, though, I'm going to lightly smoke the jalapenos just ever so little, just because until they get just a little bit of tender and smoke in the heat. Then top them, split them, hollow them, and fill them with that chopped up brisket. And then crumble some of that Mexican queso cheese on them.
That's the peel. That's delicious.
And crumble and a little bit of crumbled bacon. And back in the smoker for like 10-15 minutes. And bring them out and have the most awe-inspired. And it's a stolen idea, mind you. I actually tasted something like this down at a little restaurant in my hometown on the way home from New Orleans. And it was astonishingly delicious.
Yo, that sounds like a great party.
It's like an open-faced stuffed jalapeno.
Right. I can see it in my mind right now. And like you said, the secret is to get the big ones, get the nice big ones.
Yeah. And the smokiness kind of turns them into little roasty chipotles.
Oh, God. See, I would like to have a nice side of rice with that. Nice side of rice.
Oh, that'd be nice. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just
to even Or even, out. Even, even, but, hey, even some quinoa. I like quinoa.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, me too. You know, and I don't really understand the difference between quinoa. Well, quinoa and couscous. Well, couscous is made.
Couscous is a pasta. Quinoa is a grain.
Okay, but they look the same when you.
They kind of do. Those little itsy bitsy circular. But quinoa is actually a grain, and what's fascinating about quinoa is the degree to which it is nutritionally complete.
Well, wait a minute. Is this that grain that I read about National Geographic like 15 years ago? It's purple. I think it has some seeds.
Well, it is an ancient
grain, and it has a whole lot of vitamins.
Yeah, it comes from the Andes.
Right, that is.
And it's got all it's got all nine of the essential amino acids in it. It's one of the few foods on Earth that does.
Right. That's what intrigued me about it, because it keeps
us delicious.
Alive, you know?
It's delicious, like in a quinoa salad with a lemon vinaigrette. Whoa.
Right.
Yeah.
I know exactly where it is in food. You know how food is.
Oh, but hey, that reminds me, because you're a Trader Joe's kind of guy.
Yep.
There's a big-ass recall on.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, and it affects... food from Harris Teeter, 7-Eleven, Kroger, Trader Joe's, and let's see, what's the date line on this? October 23rd. Grab-and-go items. Harris Teeter, Kroger, Whole Foods, 7-Eleven, Trader Joe's, Walmart. Millions of pounds of ready-to-eat salads and pre-made food items, including entrees, burritos, wraps, and pizzas, at all of those places I listed have been recalled due to potential risk of listeria and salmonella contamination. Because corporate
listeria is terrible.
Yeah, because corporate America.
That's terrible news.
The recalls stem from those issued by a dozen food manufacturers, including Bacavor Foods, Involve Foods, and Ruiz Food Products. They notified the U.S. Department of Agriculture about products they shipped that could include ingredients such as corn, diced onions, and other vegetables possibly tainted with bacteria, all provided from a single company. Wait for it. Irony alert. McCain Foods.
Oh, no.
According to the USDA.
It's a big company. They make McCain potatoes. They make a lot of different things. That was a dumb statement.
Yeah, and they can't keep the salmonella and the listeria out of their food.
Have you noticed we've been having more, I don't know if they're identifying it more, but that seems like in the past year, that every week now, we've had listeria and salmonella outbreaks and all
right.
Kinds of cereal.
And do you remember, and do you remember every time Republicans say, we got to get rid of these job-killing regulations, and corporations will police themselves because they want to sell good products because they want to make money in the market.
Yeah.
Well,
the
initial recalls announced by the USDA on October 17th involved relatively small quantities ranging from 217 pounds to 940 pounds of salads. Among those products recalled last week were Whole Foods Santa Fe-style salad with chicken, sold at stores in California, Trader Joe's labeled barbecue-flavored chicken salad sold in several states, and Walmart's Market Side Fiesta salad with steak, sold in some of its stores. But then again, now it's worse. 795,261 pounds of ready-to-eat meat and poultry products like Harris Teeter Deli Bakery brand bacon, egg and cheese burritos, and chicken sausage egg white and cheese breakfast burritos. The story goes on and says, Bacavor Foods, which makes products for Harris Teeter and Trader Joe's, has production facilities in Carson, California, Charlotte, North Carolina, and Jessup, Pennsylvania. The products recalled could contain an onion ingredient supplied by McCain Foods that may be contaminated with salmonella and listeria monocytogenes, according to the USDA.
So it's all over, and they can't pinpoint anything. I mean, they know it came from McCain, but it's so in the food chain now, right?
Yeah, 16-ounce Harris Teeter Deli Bakery brand barbecue-style chicken and artisan pizza. Trader Joe's carnitas with salsa verde burritos. Jesus. You know, as Randy in PA says, hang on here. The U.S. can't seem to grow lettuce without poisoning people. No kidding. Let's see. Scott wants a clarification. I can't spell it, but what is quinoa? Where in the store might I find it, and would our local version of Kroger, Ralph's, have it? I know for a fact they would, because my Kroger has it, and if Kroger in West Virginia has quinoa, you got it in San Diego.
Q-U-I-N-O-A.
Yeah, Q-U-I-N-O-A.
It's over there with the rice.
Yeah, it's in the rice and beans and couscous, and yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's good. And if you know what I like about couscous, though? It's so quick. All you have to do is boil the water.
Boom, done.
It's off the heat. Boom, you cover it. I mean, it's tasty. But, you know, this disturbs me, because here I am right in front of one of my bookcases, and I'm looking at The Jungle, because you know I love that book.
Yeah.
So every time I hear about one of these food poisoning outbreaks, I'm thinking about Upton Sinclair's The Jungle. And I'm like, okay, these folks need to revisit history again. You know, there's a reason that we have regulations. You know, if a regulation is studied and it seems to be stifling, I have no problem with, you know, revisiting.
Well, but most of these stifling regulations, what they mean by stifling is by having to make sure we're not poisoning people, it costs us a half a penny on a share, and that makes investors nervous on Wall Street and feel uncertain. Wall Street investors are some of the most dainty, delicate human beings I've ever heard of in my life. I can't tell you the number, especially this week, the number of reports I've heard on all and seen on all kinds of different platforms saying, Wall Street investors were nervous this week. And I just get this vision in my head of the Wall Street investor who's like one of those shaky-ass little teacup poodles. Just, you know, vibrating like it ate a peach pit and can't quite shit it out. And, oh, the market. Yeah, right. Oh, the market plunged. The doorbell rang.
I know that dog you're talking about. I'm like, damn, man, every time I see you, you're shaking. What the fuck? Are you ever calm?
And, you know, it's a hell of an image to go alongside the captains of industry.
I mean, what are they nervous about? They're going to lose like $1 million?
No, you know what they're nervous about? They probably know better than us rubes, Todd, what a fake the entire fucking market is.
Bob, it's faker now than ever. It's always been fake, but it's super fake right now. I mean, right as we speak now. There is no way in hell that the economy is doing what they say it's doing. There is no way in hell. This is bullshit.
Right, and that's why reality finally caught up, and now every last penny of gain that the market has made since January 1, 2018 is just fucking gone.
This thing's about to drop out, and we're about to get it's about to get real, real soon. It's going to be
yeah,
up.
Jump, motherfuckers. You know?
I 25,000 on what? You know, and I'm so glad you brought this up about the stock market, because I was asking someone else about this the other night. Now, you know, you go to a middle-of-the-road place out to eat, you know, like the Texas Steakhouse, you know, just fun places to eat. One person, one adult, not include any alcohol or anything, you're going to spend at least, you know, $12 to $15, right? I mean,
yeah,
unless you're going for a sale. Like, unless you go into Golden Corral and they have a super special, you're going to spend at least $12 an hour. The folks working there, grown people with households, if they're lucky, they're making $10 an hour. That doesn't add up.
No, it doesn't.
Think how many people in this country, if you don't live in a city, you're working for $10 an hour most. If you're not in an economically booming area, you know, that has booming health care and higher education, and maybe a small factory.
Oh, believe you me, and that $10 an hour job, at best, if you can get it, at least where I live, Todd, you're lucky if you can get 20 hours a week.
That's the other thing. So something is incredibly wrong with the economy. It just doesn't. It's not adding up. And where is all this money going? I really think that the industrialists, this breakaway civilization thing, there's something to it. Either they're going underground, or they're just planning to live in space, and this is just going to be like a polluted wasteland that, you know, the regular folk will be living and working on, and, you know, the people with money will either be underground or in space. Because there's no way around this pollution. Now, 10 years? How the fuck are we going to fix this shit? These people are not motivated to do anything. You know, if they were serious, and like you said, you're not the only one who's been thinking about this. Anyone who's lived in the city, you see when you fly home and you see the tops of these skyscrapers, you're like, damn, that's a lot of wasted space. There's no competing trees. It's just constant sunshine all the time. Even in the north, you know, it's sunny. You know, you look at the Comcast tower in Philly. That's a big ass tower, man. It should have solar panels all over the place.
You'd think.
It's ridiculous. Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, it's national security. You know, I wrote a paper years ago, like 1990, about, you know, this was when cell phones were really getting big. And, you know, we went from Walkmans to nice little gadgets, but everybody, it was when, you know, electronics were really popping off. Everybody, like...
Oh, that's one of the things I love about watching The Americans, Todd. You know, mm-hmm. it's safe to watch now that the program's ending. Over. Mm-hmm. Is that it starts in like 1983. And so you see teenagers walking around with Walkmans on, with those crummy little tiny headphones.
Yeah, they were great, though. We didn't understand what the best thing going. I mean, that was cutting edge then.
And a friend of mine was actually the properties master on that program for the last two seasons. And,
oh, man.
And, you know, going out and finding old trash 80, TRS-80s or Commodore 64s and shit to populate the set with, that must have been a blast.
Right. That's fun work, going out into auctions and getting stuff like that. But you know what? Think about it. Now here we are where data is fungible. Data is money. So we're giving all our data for free, where it should have been, this is what should have happened. We should have free electricity. We should have free power and then charge people for the electronics. You know, because the people, the industrials have the money. They can make the shift. You make the energy free and then you charge for the electronics. Just like with printers. You know, printers, they're cheap as shit. It's the ink.
Oh, you get slaughtered on the ink.
You know, because we're giving up. Look at all the data we give up for free. They should be paying us. We shouldn't have a cell phone bill. They should be paying us.
Well, you know, that goes back to my feelings about credit reporting agencies. I think they should be fucking outlawed. At least for ordinary consumers.
Isn't that something? That's a real
scandal. And at the very least, their ability to acquire and transmit your personal data should be against the law. Because they've proven that they cannot secure it. And it's not like it's going to become, they're going to get any better at securing it, because as we move toward, what's it called, quantum computing?
Mm-hmm.
Things like passwords and so-called cybersecurity, we might be close to getting the quantum computers. We're not ready. We're not getting any. We're not, no. Cybersecurity is a joke.
Yep, I agree with you. We need to slow down a little bit and think this out, because things are moving very quickly, and we haven't even learned how to ride the tricycle properly yet. You know, when they're looking at that big racing bike. Yeah, you know, I agree. I absolutely agree. But and we haven't even talked about the back doors. This Chinese story. I seem to remember this is actually an old story. They warned us about this years ago.
Well, yeah.
About these back doors. Do you remember that? Am I making this up?
No, you're not. I have members of this community who constantly warn me about these things, and I try to take the warnings and do with them what I can, but, you know, hell. Just to shift gears back to the fun with corporate food again for a moment.
Oh no! Wait, my bowels hurt. Okay.
This goes back a week.
Mm-hmm.
Some scientists in South Korea, and working for Greenpeace East Asia, did a massive study of, wait for it, salt. Salt.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we now know that microplastics can be found in 90% of the table salt brands worldwide.
Holy cow.
Microplastics. I probably don't have to say this, but microplastics are not good for you.
No.
Sung Kyu Kim, a marine science professor at Incheon National University in South Korea, said, "The findings suggest that human ingestion of microplastics via marine products is strongly related to emissions in a given region. Salt samples from 21 countries in Europe, North and South America, Africa, and Asia were analyzed. The three brands that did not contain microplastics are from Taiwan, refined sea salt, China, refined rock salt, and France, unrefined sea salt produced by solar evaporation. The whole study was published in Environmental Science and Technology."
That's crazy.
You want a little salt, want a little plastic on your steak, buddy?
You know, we have, I have black Hawaiian salt. I have all kinds of really good salt. But, you know, I'm thinking that means our oceans are thoroughly compromised now.
I've got a jar here of pink Himalayan salt from that well-known Himalayan outpost, Paramus, New Jersey, deep in the Himalayas.
It's that high peak in Paramus.
Yeah, you know, you go Kathmandu, Paramus, New Jersey.
Hey, look, there's Paramus Park, the mall.
Yeah,
there's
sure.
That's crazy, isn't it? Oh, now you make me think about that wonderful Montreal steak season again, because it's all coarse. That's so sad. That's what I'm saying, man. We're all polluted now. I don't know. We're all going to be mutants. I want to come back with an exoskeleton, though. I think that's the way to go.
Okay, everybody. Write this down. It's the 25th of October, 2018. It's 25. It's 8:35 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Todd wants an exoskeleton.
I do.
I just want helium-filled pants.
Oh, so you can just float around? You don't have to just...
Yeah, without being as odious as a Harkonnen, you know?
You know what, man? I saw that the newer version of Hitchhiker's Guide, the other day it came on. The one with, I love Mos Def. But I remember the old series when I was a teenager, and I forgot how much I liked it. But that movie is pretty damn funny. The one with Mos Def, have you seen that?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, it's from like 2002 or 2014. It's the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Wow.
You know, like the series. But
yeah.
It's a movie. Yeah, I didn't know. I thought you'd seen that.
No.
You know who Mos Def is, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know Mos Def.
You know, even as a white guy, I know who Mos Def is.
I'm not assuming. Okay. Because Mos Def is cool, man.
He's no, you gave me an opportunity to use my nerdy white guy voice, so that's cool.
Well, that's always a good thing, right?
By the way, a recommendation for us from Robert in Australia. Many years ago, British comedian Ben Elton wrote a book called Stark. It was all about the throwaway race to the bottom economy. At the end of the book, we find out that the 1% have been building a star ark. They've run the place, they've run the planet into the ground, and now they're leaving. And they do. On Earth, with no hope... On Earth, with no hope, humanity goes out with a giant worldwide party. On the star arc, the 1% don't last very long. They all discover that they hate each other, and they all want to be in control, and eventually infighting kills them off. Stark.
Wow. Wait, is that a book or a movie?
It's a book. Stark, by Ben Elton.
I can't forget that. That you know, it sounds so plausible. That's the thing.
Well, I think there are some spoilers involved, but it sounds like it still might be a worthwhile read.
Well, I have to check that out. So your website is still up, right?
Yeah, headon.live.
And so Patreon, because I don't know, what's the negative about PayPal again?
Well, I mean, it is what it is.
I thought it was some kind of political.
Oh, yeah, well, it was started by some right-wing piece of shit. But, you know, pretty much all money is controlled at some level by some right-wing piece of shit. You know, there's, as far as the just the operations of it, people, like, for instance, if somebody subscribes tonight, their subscription will come out on the 25th of every month. If, on the other hand, somebody subscribes to Patreon, everything comes out on the first of the month.
No matter what,
you know,
that's the way to do it.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, Todd, it's been a great conversation. I will, we'll move along, but I'll talk, hopefully we'll talk soon. And,
thanks, Bob.
Enjoy the salt, man.
I will. All right.
It's the spice of life.
Man, I always enjoy it. Thanks a lot.
See you, Todd. Bye now. And we're 22 minutes before the hour again. Just a reminder, we're not fundraising, but John in Colorado kindly put a $50 challenge on the table, and if someone would, and there's $30 to go on it, if somebody wants to answer it, that would be great, because then John will kick in another 50, so it'll be a net 150 positive, so that would almost be all the way to a program's worth. So thank you. Thank you, Johannes. Thank you, Charlene, for knocking down the first 20 of it, and anybody who cares to knock down the other 30, awesome. And thank you to John earlier today as well for jumping in. As to PayPal, Jack in Shreveport says, Meg Whitman, I think she ran for office somewhere, California maybe? Yeah, but there was a guy too. And I can't remember which odious human being that was. Randy in PA says, credit reporting agencies and businesses go by the Vantage score and not the FICO score that they give consumers. It's a rigged game, plain and simple. Jason, meanwhile, with a note. Peter Thiel. There we go. Jason says, huge POS. Yeah, he is. Isn't he the guy who put Gawker out of business? Isn't he a big pal of Julius Geezer? Am I thinking about the same guy? Anyway, let's run over to the stress line, see what Scott's up to. Hey, Scott.
Oh, Bob, stop me before I call again. Here's the deal, okay? The conversations are so engaging and riveting and thought-inspiring, I can't help but call in to toss in a few goodies.
I can't help calling the program again. Thank you very much.
And speaking of music, apropos of nothing, a tune popped up on my Amazon Prime Unlimited music player from the 20s. I have a very eclectic collection.
That's really eclectic, Scott.
Sophie Tucker, The Last of the Red Hot Mamas, who, by the way, I never met her, but I have the impression that she and my Aunt Emma, that you've heard so much about, might have been buds had the stars been in alignment.
Well, you know, you mentioned Sophie Tucker. Everything is a reminder of a great line from a movie. You know, one of my favorite comedies is The In-Laws.
Yeah.
1978, 1979. There's a scene where Mr. Hirshhorn is in the dentist chair, and he's got a bad tooth, and he's talking to Alan Arkin's character, the dentist, and he says, this tooth, when I was poor, this tooth ate only beans. When I was rich, this tooth had steak. This tooth once chewed on the neck of the second cousin of Sophie Tucker. to which Alan Arkin replies, it's a wonderful tooth, but it's dead and it's got to come out.
Yeah. I have got to rent that from Amazon.
As far as comedic filmmaking goes, I'm of the opinion that there is not a wasted millisecond in the whole thing. It's nearly perfect.
I know I saw it at some point along the way on TV or something. But I must have been distracted or half watching or something. I have got to rent it. That's all there is to it. But very quickly, a couple of things. I've got a book recommendation for Todd and everybody else. Also a TV viewing tip for everybody. And first, a word about technology. Last night or the night before last, I'm coming back from running errands and buying my Mega Millions ticket, which did not win, unfortunately.
Last night was Powerball.
No wonder
you didn't win Mega Millions.
Whatever night the Mega Millions was, that's when I went to the store to pick up some stuff, and on the way I got my tickets. But Yeah, well, that's right. And I also got a Powerball. I haven't checked the numbers, but I probably didn't win that either.
You didn't. It's up to $750 million now.
Good. I'll buy another ticket tonight for Saturday. So I get off the bus coming home, and there's about a block and a half, half a block walk from the bus stop to the house. And I've got my my ear pods in, and I'm listening to just the music as it pops up. And one of the tunes that popped up was Sophie Tucker, 1924. Yeah, if you can't see Mama, no, if you don't see Mama every night, you can't see Mama at all. And I can't get that damn song out of my head.
You know what? I'm terrified to even listen to it if it's earwormed you that badly.
Oh, it's a lovely little tune. It's a lovely little tune. And it's not heavily processed. It's apparently from the original 78. And there's a little bit of surface noise and scratch and pop. And those tinny sounding horns and drums and things. Oh, but it's great. I'm sure I would have gotten on well with Sophie Tucker. But anyway, the other musical thing that I heard also coming back from the Stowe was an instrumental semi-classical piece called Puffin' Billy, which everyone of my generation has heard at least once. The only thing is they don't know from where. It was the theme song, the opening and the closing song of Captain Kangaroo. Okay? Puffin' Billy. Look it up.
Okay.
So I'm walking up the street carrying my bags of stuff, and Puffin' Billy comes on, and I think back to watching Captain Kangaroo on CBS television in the early 60s when I was 6 or 7, remembering that song and thinking back to those days, and then stopping a moment to marvel at the fact that I was hearing that song from so long ago on a computer in my shirt pocket that was not just a computer, it was an encyclopedia. And it wasn't just a computer and an encyclopedia, it was a jukebox. And it wasn't just a computer, an encyclopedia, and a jukebox. It was a TV station, you know, to watch TV, to watch TV. But it wasn't all that. It was all that plus a thing that if I wasn't exactly sure where I was going, I could hit the app and it would give me a "you are here" in real time to within 6 or 8 feet of where I was, and then key in where I wanted to be, and it would map out a walking route or a bus route if I needed to catch a bus or a trolley. And I was dumbfounded by that. You talk about, you know, the Walkman from the 80s and the brick Motorola cell phones. We have certainly come a long way. This thing had, I saw something about this the other day on YouTube. The typical smartphone has something like 40 times or 80 times the computing power as the computer in the lunar modules that landed on the moon. That's incredible.
True.
That's incredible. It just, I don't know, it just, when you stop and think about stuff, it can blow you away, which is why a lot of people don't stop and think about stuff, I guess. But here's my book recommendation for Todd. He was talking about the endless parade of lunacies in the Trump White House. I encourage him and everybody else who has a strong constitution to get Bob Woodward's book, Fear. I'm about halfway through with that thing, and I read a chapter or two every night, and each new chapter brings, you know, another float in the endless parade of lunacies of this crew. It boggles the mind, the incompetence runs riot in our land today. It just, I'm almost afraid to get to the end of the book. And I know how the final words of the book, and I won't spoil it for anybody else, but the TV viewing tip, you mentioned The Americans, and I'm glad you're enjoying The Americans. I may watch it again. I liked it so much. But the other night there was a premiere on Amazon, or was it Netflix? It was one of those. I think it was Amazon. You remember Mad Men, created by Matt?
Of course, Reiner. Yes.
He's the last couple of years has been, people say, what happened to Matt? Well, Matt has been working on a new show which premiered recently, I'm pretty sure on Amazon, called The Romanoffs. And it's 8 stories, and I don't know whether they're connected.
I've seen mention of it, and it didn't grab me. Are you saying it's actually good?
Well, I've only watched the first episode. When it premiered, there were 2 episodes available, and I watched the first one. But I'm going to rewatch that, and I think they're coming up with an episode a week. So there's probably 3 or 4 of them by now. I'm going to watch them, and I know from his work on The Sopranos, when he was connected with that show, and, of course, Mad Men, that he does good work. And the first episode did entice me to stick around for more. I just like to watch more than one at a time. So I'm delaying my satisfaction for, you know, until maybe the weekend or something. But it was pretty good. The only thing I didn't like about it, some of it is in the first episode takes place in Paris, and I do not like subtitles because I watch TV in the recliner tilted back, and with bifocals, that makes subtitles very interesting, you know, in terms of readability. So, but you and Todd had a hell of a conversation tonight, you know, and it's like, and what, give me the spelling of that grain again.
Q-U-I-N-O-A.
Okay, I've seen that on the shelf in the rice and noodle oil, but I never went.
It's good. It's really yummy.
What? How do you fix it?
You boil it. It's a grain.
How do you serve it? I mean, do you grits?
No, not quite like grits, but I mean, you'll see like quinoa salads with vegetables and or quinoa salads with fruit, but I mean, it can just be a side.
Yeah, like instead of rice, you would.
Yeah. And for people who have gluten problems, it's a godsend.
Yeah. Well, the thing that
and there's red quinoa and white quinoa, and it has a significant degree of nutritional completeness.
Yeah, well, that's what rang the little bell for me when you said it has what, 8 or all the essential.
Yeah, like all 9.
All right, well, I'll have to check that out because I'm always on the lookout for something to brighten up my drab, wretched life in terms of Epicurean delights. And another thing, you mentioned Fox News Sunday, hosted by...
Yeah, otherwise known as What Is My Son Doing?
Well, I'll tell you what the working title of that program was, but I have to set it up.
Okay.
Chris Wallace is Mike Wallace's younger son, but Chris Wallace had an older brother named Peter Wallace. And in 1962, Peter Wallace was 19 years old, and I think he had either finished his first year in college or was about to embark on a college career. And he went off for the summer between high school and college to see Europe, as many kids did in the 50s and 60s. And poor Peter Wallace was hiking in mountains, a mountainous area of Greece, and fell off the mountain. And they didn't hear from him for quite a time. And there was a search party, and they found him at the bottom of a ravine, dead at age 19. And that had a profound effect, as you might imagine, on Mike Wallace, who had a rather checkered professional life up to that point. He had, do you remember the TV panel show, To Tell the Truth?
Yes.
Hosted by Bud Collier?
Right.
Mike Wallace was the host and moderator of the show in the pilot film when they were pitching it, Goodman Todman were pitching it to CBS. Mike Wallace was the host, moderator of the show. He did cigarette commercials. I think Parliament was his, or Philip Morris on his ABC late night controversial talk show, Nightline or Nightbeat. And he also did Parliament commercials. And he was just in the outer realm of TV personality. But the death of his oldest son kind of made him take stock. And he said he would dedicate the rest of his career to more worthy, serious enterprises, which is how he got into television news. First in Los Angeles as a local anchor for an independent station, and then as a young newbie correspondent for CBS News, and then you know the rest of the deal where he got 60 Minutes.
Right.
But so it's a death in a family is sad, but when some worthwhile thing can come of it, that's never a bad thing. So the original working title of Fox News Sunday was "The Wrong Wallace Kid Fell Off the Mountain," or words to that effect. I think. But that's my story. So.
Wow.
Make of that what.
Ah, okay. By the way, a quick note coming in from the Blue Hen on Twitter. Tell the quinoa novices to wash it first, or it will be bitter.
Okay. Wash the.
Yeah, just rinse it.
Rinse the quinoa. Boy, you would need a hellacious fine colander or strainer.
Yeah, just a wire mesh strainer with a fine mesh.
How big are the little grains?
They're tiny. It's like small couscous.
Okay, well, maybe that's why I didn't get it. If you've got to rinse it, my colander has holes in it that are rather large. I'd say 3 millimeters across.
Yeah, I'd just go for a fine wire mesh strainer because, you know, like dry, like rice when it's dry, you know, a cup of it makes a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say it probably swells.
Yeah. But it really
does
is good.
Does it swell more than Trump's already inflated ego?
We're never far from that, are we?
And what about that thinking? Is it kept in the attic?
No, it hangs at Mar-a-Lago. He used $10,000 of the Trump Foundation. See, he didn't use his own money. He used $10,000 of the Trump Foundation's money, and his lawyer said, well, he had to because he was stuck with it.
Well, see, I have in mind the picture of Dorian Gray, where the portrait of the young reprobate is in the attic, and somehow his sins and misbehaviors are put upon the painting so that he can remain eternally youthful and vibrant. I wonder what, if they put it in the attic, what would it do? Would it get more orange?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it gets human.
One wonders.
By the way, going back to a couple of things that you mentioned before we sign off here, Steve from Georgistan says, tell Scott, as creepy as this sounds, an android is also a companion entertainer. You can tell your Google Assistant that you want to play a trivia game, and lo and behold, it'll fire up an impressive trivia game with a host, music, everything. Try it.
Okay, well, I've got iPhone.
And
I don't think Android works.
Yeah. Then Jack in Shreveport says, Lunar Computer. I think the Apollo stuff and maybe some of the first shuttles used what is called magnetic core memory, which consisted of small magnetic donuts with multiple wires running through and around them, one donut per bit. Jesus.
Wow.
And then Lee, and this is right in his wheelhouse. Scott's wrong. Computing power. Scott's wrong. My smartphone has a 1.8 gigahertz clock. The Apollo computer was 0.043 megahertz. To line up the digits, that's 1,800,043. So that's, yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, it's astonishing.
Well, I whatever the ratio is, it's for most people to walk around with that technology in their pocket is amazing.
Yeah, and look what we, you know, look what we, well, I mean, it's television you can carry in your pocket. That's what it boils down to. We got to get out here, Scott.
All right.
You have yourself a good evening, my friend. Good luck with the quinoa.
I will, Bob. I will try it. I'm going to the store tonight. I'll ask for it by name.
Yeah, well, I think there's a Kroger brand. Or maybe a private selection organic or something like that. Yeah.
Well, I'll get it. I'll whip up a batch and I'll report back.
Do please. But don't forget to wash your quinoa. And wear clean and wear clean underwear.
My mama always said that. Sorry, Bob.
Mama was right. Later, Scott.
Yeah.
Bye now. And so we find ourselves at the end of the program. Thank you very kindly, one and all, for this Thorn in the Side Thursday. Back for Friday on the Front Porch tomorrow. And that will be, as it usually is, a rousing conversation, I'm sure. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thank you to our subscribers and everybody who kicks in during the program and at odd times of the day. Thank you very kindly. Thanks very much indeed to all of you who share your precious finite time engaged in this little ongoing conversation. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, for 13 years and one day, it's all for you. Later.